Yeah.
Hello there, this is Kendo Nagasaki, Peter Thornley, the man behind the mask, and I am watching Cheap Shot Entertainment this afternoon and this morning and tonight. Hope you all join me. Bye!
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
This is awesome! Hello and welcome, Cheap Shot Nation, to another retro wrestling review. And this month, we're following on from WrestleMania 20 and the events that happened therein with Backlash, which is a Raw-only pay-per-view. And it was around the time where the brand split had happened. And apart from the big four, which at the time was Rumble, Mania, SummerSlam and Survivor Series, all of the pay-per-views were split by brand. And they'd usually take it in turns. So like I say, this is Backlash. And it is a Raw only pay-per-view. It had a main event of Chris Benoit, Triple H and Shawn Michaels, a repeat of the match at the end of WrestleMania, the main event, where Chris Benoit won the World Heavyweight Championship, with the arena appearing in the games WWE Day of Reckoning 2, WWE WrestleMania 21, and WWE SmackDown vs. Raw. As I said, it's a Raw-only pay-per-view. It took place on April the 18th, 2004, so 20 years ago to the date when this podcast is being released. And it came from the country of Canada. Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, in fact. So Chris Benoit's backyard, literal backyard. The arena was Rexall Place. The attendance was 13,000. And considering now they're getting 18,000 for Raw, that's, you know. But, you know, 20 years ago, arenas were smaller. And there weren't as many eyes on the product. Just coming out of the Attitude Era, really, and into the Ruthless Aggression Era. Which I really like, and I will stand by that, with the theme song Eyes Wide Shut by Edgewater being the song that plays throughout the show. And just before we get on to the main pay-per-view, I'm going to take you through what happened on Sunday Night Heat. Bearing in mind, I don't actually watch these, watch the Sunday Night Heat, at least. So, Val Venus defeated Matt Hardy. And you think about those two superstars and where they've come from. Multiple championships, ladder matches, etc, etc. They're on Sunday Night Heat for this one. So, the show starts up with Shelton Benjamin and Ric Flair. Shelton Benjamin recently drafted over to Raw. Yes, we had the draft at this point. That's been going now for 20 years. Can you believe that? With the draft upon us again. And Shelton Benjamin going against Ric Flair. Of course, Evolution was round ringside as well. This has been a tete-a-tete going back and forth on Raw for many, many weeks. Since Shelton Benjamin came over, he's been placed in sort of a babyface role, having come away from Charlie Haas and the world's greatest tag team. And he's quite impressive. And he's still quite impressive. I always wonder how you can sort of mess up someone like Shelton Benjamin, where you could just sort of hand him anything and he'd just do it. Obviously in the same wrestling team as Brock Lesnar. Again, another person who could just have something and do it. But Shelton Benjamin picks up the victory despite all the distractions, etc. After Flair goes for the brass knuckles, of course, the master of the cheat before Eddie Guerrero made it cool again. Goes for the brass knucks and is squashed in the corner by Shelton Benjamin with a big splash. He then proceeds to climb to the top and hits a flying clothesline on Ric Flair for the pinfall. Something that you don't see a lot these days. Even the mighty super kick is a move that just gets thrown about these days. But yes, a flying clothesline took Ric Flair out, the 16-time world champion. Good match though. Really, really good match. Great way to start off a pay-per-view. There was lots of action, decent amount of time. And it was a really good plan to put a veteran in a match with a young upstart like Shelton Benjamin. I think he was around mid-20s at this point. And he's on the way up. And again, like I say, sad that Shelton Benjamin never did find his place in WWE, because I think he could have been really, really good. I'm going to give this one 4 cheap shots out of 5. Moving on now, and we get Randy Orton cutting a promo on his match and says he'll put Mick Foley into retirement once and for all. Of course, that match, I think it's a no-holds-barred match later on. And it was also the time where Jonathan Coachman was, dare I say, an active competitor. yes, that Jonathan Coachman. And he defeated Tajiri, who is absolutely awesome. And this makes me sad. But, you know, I've put in my notes, I'm the coach, that's why. That's his t-shirt, by the way, at this point in time. With some assistance from Garrison Cade, who's no longer with us, sadly. Gets the victory, tainted victory. Got to say, though, I was quite impressed with the coach, and Tajiri is a good person to put him in with, in terms of creating a match and structure and being different. Coach proved that he's quite athletic, even though he is in that role where he's interviewing people, consummate butt kisser role. But yeah, it's a shame the way it ended the way it did. He was very sound in the rings, obviously, put some time in, and I'm going to give this one 3 cheap shots out of 5. Not much to say about this one, but like I say, I was impressed with the coach, and Tajiri's always one of those people that can light up a ring with his skills. So, again, moving on. We now get a 2-on-1 handicap match between Chris Jericho, Christian, and Chris Jericho's former love interest, Trish Stratus, in a turn that was one of the most heelish things I've ever seen at a WrestleMania. Trish Stratus turned on Chris Jericho and joined his former best friend, Christian, in his fight for glory. There isn't a lot that Trish does here. Obviously, it's basically a way to have her in the match because she's the one that everyone hates now. And like I say, great way to turn. Basically, a way for her to be in the match without being in the match. It was mostly Christian and Chris Jericho, so you know that the match was going to be good, because these two do not put on bad matches, especially around this time. And quite frankly, I don't think I've ever seen a really bad match from either of these two. So two really good competitors. But anyway, Chris Jericho would pick up the victory here with a catapult on Christian into Trish, who is currently in the corner as she tried to jump in and create chaos. Does then a step up into Gauri for the win. Again, something simple, but you don't find it gets used very often. I say, not a lot for Trish to do, but what she did was great. The interference, the constant mind playing with Chris Jericho. And so far, we've had three matches, and three very entertaining matches. I get the feeling it can only go downhill from here until it picks up again. But I'm going to give this one 3.5 cheap shots out of 5. The WWE Women's Championship is on the line now, and it is Victoria, the champion, who defeats Lita to retain the title. This match was won face versus face, and it showed a lot. There's going to be some kind of heelish tendencies along the line here, but both women showing a lot of respect. To each other, which is good, and they managed to pull out a reasonably decent match, even though I believe that Lita had hurt herself like quite early on with her flippy moves and stuff. She's quite sort of ragdollish, is Lita. She's very good, but she's quite sort of ragdollish, so she doesn't put spring into moves. She tends to land funny because she's, you know, one of those sort of, what do they call it? Well, like I say, ragdollish. But hard fought victory for Victoria here. Victoria, like I say, would defeat Lita and retain the championship. A small package. Again, very, very simple. And effective. Like I say, it's clear that Lita had hurt herself falling out of the ring during a lockup. So what that spot was is that neither of them would let go of each other, and they ended up going to the ropes and falling out of the ring, both landing really hard on the floor, but Lita taking the brunt of the fall as well, and that may have hindered the original plan. Well, these two ladies fought tooth and nail, put on a show, and finished the match safely, which I respect a lot, because things do happen. I've witnessed that in person, and it's not nice. However, another 3 out of 5 cheap shots for this one, after the match with Molly Holly. After the match, Molly Holly and Gail Kim, a newly formed team, would attack and lay waste to Victoria and Lita, asserting their dominance over the Women's Championship picture. And we move on to the WWE Intercontinental Championship match, which is a hardcore match. So if you don't know what a hardcore match is, it's basically anything goes, false count anywhere, etc., etc. What can you say about this match? Mick Foley's playground, isn't it? But Randy Orton, at the same time, really impressed with what he could do in this type of match, being a youngster. And one with a cocky attitude, it's like, hey, look, I'm so handsome and all that kind of stuff. I think at one point he was billed as chiseled out of stone and things like that. So really impressed with Randy Orton. I think this was his sort of coming of age match. It was when you knew, I mean, you knew he was special anyway, but It was gearing towards something huge. So, Evolution would be banned from ringside for this one. And Randy Orton would defeat Cactus Jack to retain the championship with an RKO on Barbie. And if you didn't know what Barbie is, it's baseball bat wrapped in barbed wire. Barbie. For the win. This one really does have to be seen to be believed. It's one of those matches that comes along in WWE once in a while, and when it does, you can really appreciate it and enjoy it. Completely unlike other things that you see now where the weapons are out regardless. Even in a one-on-one straight wrestling match, weapons are being used. We are gearing towards, I think, a TV-14 era, as they would in America. So, you know, we're talking about parental guidance rather than, probably parental guidance anyway, but a bit more on the top end of parental guidance, where they can get away with doing certain things, like an attitude era. But yes, this one's brutal. The battle inside the ring, outside the ring, there's tables, there's Barbie, there's barbed wire boards. They battled outside the ring, into the back. And fair play, Evolution did not even try to attack when they went in the back, which they could have done, because they're banned from ringside. They're not banned from backstage. But I think this one was to pass the torch to Randy Orton, to affirm his place in the company as Intercontinental Champion. And he did make it mean something, which was great. I can't fault this match at all. 5 cheap shots out of 5. And like I say, the finish was a solid finish. So RKO on the barbed wire bat after both had been through thumbtacks and tables and all that kind of stuff. It was great. Absolutely brilliant. Hard act to follow. So, yeah, 5. Cheap shots out of 5. So we move into the back now, where Triple H says that Benoit will not catch lightning in a bottle twice, that lightning will not strike the same place twice, and that he will be the World Heavyweight Champion once again by the end of the night. Tag team action next. It's Hurricane and the superhero in training, or shit for short, Rosie versus La Resistance, and they would defeat La Resistance. And this one was a different iteration, because Rene Dupree was on SmackDown. This is Sylvain Ranier and Rob Conway, a French sympathiser who originally appeared as a referee. So, like I say, Hurricane and Rosie would defeat La Resistance. And that is massive fall from grace as well, because you know, they used to be the tag team champions. They were like the new Quebecers, the Rougeau brothers, that kind of thing. And with them being sort of French, Canadian, thought they might have got the rub of the green. No. Hurricane Rosie would defeat them. Eugene would make a surprise appearance, and he has recently wrestled very near me, actually, which is really cool. Makes his way to the ring and adds some nonsensical shenanigans, trying to get him over here as Eric Bischoff's nephew, who is just a really big wrestling fan and very good at doing the moves as well. Get the feeling this was made at the last minute as a match. I feel the guys in the ring had to deal with a lot, including a random character in Eugene wandering around ringside and taking the focus off the match. The cameras focused on Eugene, for example, rather than the actual wrestling that was going off inside. And it's always difficult to follow a match, to follow the match of the night. So this is like the softening of the buzz that was created from the previous match, which is a shame because all four of these guys could have put on a really, really banging match. And adding the Rudd in just wasn't needed, and it's a real shame, real shame. Two cheap shots out of five for that one. Moving on next, we've got Edge versus Kane, a rivalry that would span literally years, about 8 years, six, 8 years going forward. And Kane is in his bald-headed, masochistic Jacob Goodnight gimmick at the moment. Edge would defeat Kane with a spear. Edge goes for the spear, hits, and goes for the spear. Kane and referee duck out the way. Edge uses the cast. So the story is that Edge's got a broken arm. He has to wear the cast, but somehow he can still wrestle. Goes for the spear, misses. The referee is sort of dazed a little bit, dazed and confused, ducks out of the way. Edge uses the cast on Kane to pin him, and the ref doesn't see it and therefore cannot disqualify him. However, this match up to that point was very good, and to be fair, the finish made sense as well. However, I'm not sure a normal person would use a cast to bash someone over the head because they've broken their arm. The last thing you want to do is use that cast and hurt someone or hurt yourself again. However, this is professional wrestling and you must suspend your disbelief because anything can happen. And for that reason, I've given this a 3 cheap shots out of 5. A decent match, but for me, not given long enough, based on the fact that the Intercontinental Championship match went for a fair while and the next match up is the main event. So, speaking of which, I'm going to give this one 3 cheap shots out of 5. And then move on to the World Heavyweight Championship match. A triple threat match where Chris Benoit defeated Triple H and Shawn Michaels to retain the title. As chaotic as the one that we saw at WrestleMania. A repeat, if you will, of the match at WrestleMania. This one has some different spots in it. Obviously, it's not as big a crowd. It's not as big an occasion, and we don't have the feel-good moment of Chris Benoit picking up the championship, but more the feel-good moment of Chris Benoit retaining the championship in his hometown in front of his family. And it's a really good match, but watching it 20 years later, knowing what was about to come, it wasn't tainted anyway in the wrestling, but obviously seeing Nancy and Daniel celebrating with Chris it's quite a difficult watch. So if you do go back and watch this pay-per-view, you know, be warned. There is that, and lots of shots of Nancy and Daniel, and whilst the match was going off. But let's get to the match. Obviously, Chris Benoit, really good wrestler, Triple H, and Shawn Michaels, and the story was that they needed to finish their rivalry. It wasn't going to be finished. It was going to continue because Chris Benoit retained. But yes, Chris Benoit would win with the submission on Shawn Michaels. So the former champion wasn't even part of the finish. And I think that ate Triple H up going forward. But again, really good match. I'm going to give this one 4 cheap shots out of 5. Like I say, it was a submission finish on Shawn Michaels. Shawn really tried to battle out. But as Chris Benoit does, once he's got that crossface on, he uses the ropes to roll through and keep the opponent in the middle of the ring. And it was just too much. So Chris Benoit wins by submission in his hometown in front of his family and retains the World Heavyweight Championship. So this was a very good pay-per-view. Extremely good. Great way to move on from WrestleMania 20. Really good again. Really good pay-per-view. Probably one of the best WrestleManias. Certainly a turning point in terms of the way WrestleMania was presented. With the big sets and stuff like that, and the video screens. We roll on to Judgment Day next. And that is, I believe, a SmackDown only pay-per-view, which is great. That takes place on May the 16th. So we roll on to that and see where we go. Well, this pay-per-view is very good. Like I say, if you're going to watch it, enjoy it. But like I say, do be warned that Chris Benoit's family are on the front row. So if that's going to sort of upset you, don't watch that last match, but appreciate the rest of it. And on that bombshell, I've turned into Jeremy Clarkson. no. So on that note, I'm going to leave you there. Thank you very much for listening to the Talk Is Cheap podcast for Cheap Shot Entertainment. This has been Backlash 2004. And I will see you next time, wrestling fans. Goodbye.